It is well accepted that Jaws is an all-time great film, but its progeny don't rank nearly as high. Two True Freaks is proud to present Is It Jaws, where Paul Spitero and Sean Whalen are joined by an all-star list of guest hosts to review old and new films and place them on the Jaws scale, where they're ranked from Jaws to Jaws 4. Of course, for the purposes of the show, that scale does take some liberties with their actual ratings. Sure, movies that are given the ranking of Jaws are considered classic films with few flaws, if any. A ranking of Jaws 2 indicates that the film is very good and worthy of repeated viewings. A Jaws 3 ranking indicates the film was okay, but that's all. A Jaws 4 means it's ranked as a bad movie. Oh, and if you ever saw Back to the Future Part 2, you know that there's a Jaws 19. That ranking indicates that the movie is so incredibly bad that it's actually fun to watch as a result. So please join Paul and Sean as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
What is happening to me?
Did you miss me, Spidey?
I'm losing my mind. I am totally out of control. I gotta fix whatever this is right now.
Final semester, MIT.
Dad, who do you think is actually watching these?
Maybe someone.
Okay, well, bye, someone.
What the?
Dr. Banner, you found a way to suppress mutating DNA, right?
If you see me with this stuff, run.
So could you get rid of the bad aspects but keep the good?
How would you decide what parts of nature are good or bad?
Well, sorry about that.
You're not one of my students, are you?
It appears we're faced with a threat we can't control. One we can't even see. You're the only one who's immune to it. You're the only one who can sense it.
What do you think they're looking for?
Oh, see, you stumbled across my board. I'm not one of those weirdos, I swear.
He's a little weird. I'm MJ.
You two don't know each other?
Yo, Spider-Man.
You okay? Did you get rid of that monster inside you?
Think I might go see how MJ's doing.
You're not gonna get away with this.
But he might.
I didn't know you could get that big. But you're in danger. You just have to trust me.
Fine.
This whole thing can get really scary.
Who the hell is that?
Who the hell are you?
Frank, please.
I don't have anywhere else to go.
By the people who love you.
She's gonna let him go himself?
Love you because you're you.
If you're gonna do something, you better do it now.
Never forget that. No matter how powerful you become.
I miss you, mate.
Huh. All right, just give me a sec. Give me a sec. I'm not in high school anymore. Oh. Did you stretch? Are you a big stretcher? It's so good for you. You ready?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Yours? I'm Paul Spitero, and that guy over there, I don't think I remember you.
I'm forgettable.
I don't know. It feels like there's some sort of spell. But we're recording. We're recording early in the morning, as we do periodically. And do you know what it is, Sean? I remember you now. Do you know what it is?
It's our secret handshake.
It's a brand new day, is what it is.
It is a brand new day, and it's very good to record with you, buddy.
It's very good. Always very good to record with you. So we've both seen the newest Spider-Man entry in the last week or so since it came out. I'm not sure how long it will be after it came out before you get to hear this, but as we recorded, it's been out for a week, and we decided to get together and give our thoughts on it. So because it's only been out for a week, we each have only had an opportunity to see it once. Did you see it in any type of group or on your own?
So my wife and I went, when I say, did I see it in a group? I went opening night, and there's a Regal Cinema in Willoughby Hills here in Ohio, and it's got a gigantic parking lot that I have not seen filled in years. And multiple showings, you know, it was filled. We left the, we went to like the 7-ish showing, so we left at 10, and there were people walking in on a Thursday night at 10 o'clock to go see those showings. There were people in costume of all ages. It was, it felt like the height of the MCU era, you know, that type of energy in the place. The crowd was participating in the film, if that makes any sense, but not like in an annoying way. People were laughing at the right bits, cheering at the right bits. They were clapping when the film started. I saw it in 3D, so we can comment about those, you know, that whole effect and things like that. But I didn't go there with a crowd. There was not an empty seat. So I felt like I was there with a whole bunch of like-minded people who just like superhero movies. And that energy, I can't help but have it be part of this conversation because it was a fun way to see the film. And I did like the fact that sometimes when there's crowds, there's those annoying people that are getting in the way of the film, if that makes sense. This crowd was, they got it. It was almost like everyone, somebody trained them beforehand as far as how to interact with a superhero movie. Because there was not a single person in there that I was like, can you shush now so I can hear the movie? It just didn't work out that way. So it was the perfect crew to be seeing this movie with, especially considering it was a packed house.
I saw it in a group. We had myself, my wife, my visitors from Florida, my, you know, Ken, who you've met, and Lori, their daughter. We had my stepson and my stepdaughter and my stepdaughter's boyfriend with us. So we had a big crowd, and when my wife ordered the tickets for everybody, they were not, you know, there wasn't the open seating choice that there are for a lot of movies nowadays. And we got there, and it was pretty much a packed house. One disappointment, the theater itself, the air conditioning was not quite right. So it was not like sweltering hot, but it was uncomfortably warm. So that took away from the experience a little bit. But just as an initial take on it, walking out, I said, yeah, that was pretty good. I liked it. I was the most enthusiastic with that impression of it.
Okay.
Ken was close to me in that. My stepson was like, oh, this was a waste of time. So, I mean, there are different impressions on it. And just to be fair, I've had some conversations with some different people, and my impression has kind of improved. And I love when you see a movie and it's thought-provoking enough that as you think about it, you start to either like it more or even like it less. But that there's enough thought going into it that you're not just left with that surface-level opinion. And this one definitely had that. I would say as it was on the screen, my first impression was, this is darker than the other three MCU Spider-Man movies. It had a different tone to it. There was less of an emphasis on let's have the big bad and the battle scene. There were action scenes in this, but the action scenes were not the focus of the movie as far as my impression was. The focus was more of the relationships and the characterization. And I thought that was important, and that was the thing that, as I ruminated over it, made me feel more strongly that it was a little better than what I thought it was. What were your initial thoughts on it?
So you're right on the whole darker part. And you're also right on the mixed reaction. Actually, people who I really respect I've seen online, some didn't like it at all. And I was kind of shocked by that. As you are when you're like, if you're like, you walk out and you've got your own like viewpoint of the thing, you're always surprised when like, wow, people felt very differently on this. I walked out with my initial impression of they tried to do a different kind of Spider-Man story than kind of the formula that they've had for these. And I liked that. I liked that there was some kind of, it's 4 years later, you know, Peter's lost everything. I mean, and especially the people that are closest to him. And I do like some Spider-Man when, you know, things get a little bit darker from time to time. You know, in the sense that you want there to be a journey there, though, where we get back to the light. Because Spidey is that character. He's fun. He's uplifting. But half the challenge with Spidey is I like when he gets beaten down. And then we see him find through his connections, through reconnecting with the people that have helped raise him, his friends, all that kind of thing, find his way back to the light when other people would persevere. He should be that hero that motivates you. Like, we all have bad days, bad weeks, bad months. And Spider-Man's kind of that character that inspires you to keep going. I do feel like he also needs to make you smile from time to time. And this film did have that, you know, where things at certain points got fun. And especially when the friendships started forming again, you know, and those were pieces that I wanted to see some progression. And this film had progression. I did walk out afterwards wanting another movie, which I think is also important. Like, I wanted to see the continuing adventures of these characters. I wanted to see more progression. I do feel like they've done a good job of making this feel comic book, in the sense through four films, there's been a four films plus, you know, the MCU stuff, but there's been like this overarching journey of these particular characters. And I find that I like these versions. I want to see them continue on. There's a lot that we can dive into as far as likes and didn't likes, because they went to some places that I don't normally like. But I liked the context of how they did it in this as we go forward. But initial impressions are, I enjoyed the experience. Like I said, I'm giving a lot of extra credit to the crowd that I was with. It was a very high energy crowd. It was great seeing people in costume. But I'm not, when I say a little bit of extra credit, I'm not feeling like my impression of the movie was driven totally by that. But I did love going to see a communal movie like this, and everybody in there was cheering.
I want to throw in, before we go too much further, that we're going to start talking about different facts of the movie. There was something in the movie that was kept very secret going into it. And we're going to talk about that, and I think we're going to talk about it a little bit at length. So if you haven't seen it yet and you intend to see it, you might want to put this on hold, go see it, and then listen to us, because I don't want to spoil any kind of surprises. I know I personally went out of my way not to see as much as I could avoid. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that the Scorpion was in it going into it. But I really didn't know much beyond that as far as what the... When I knew the Hulk was going to be in it. But that's probably as far as it went. So I feel that in a first viewing, it's to your benefit to not know all the finer details, unless it's something that's going to be confusing, and I don't think this was. So I'm strongly suggesting, if you haven't seen it yet and you intend to see it, that you put us on hold, but please come back and listen to what our thoughts are after you've seen it. So that said, I'm going to go right to the biggest one, and the one that people had a lot of thoughts on, and I had some thoughts of my own. Mm. The, I guess, villain, and I put that in quotations, of the piece turned out to be Jean Grey. And they kept that. I didn't really keep track of time, but it was probably about half, you know, close to halfway through the movie before you knew who the villain was. And for the most part, I can justify her actions by the fact that her sister was kidnapped. She didn't know if her sister was still alive. She's trying to rescue her. And she's going to some extreme measures. She was somewhat chilling. The one part, and it was one of the most meaningful moments in the movie, but the one part where I didn't like her characterization because I felt it was sadistic, mm-hmm, was when she is occupying MJ's mind and she leads Peter on to think that he kissed her and now she remembers everything, and then she starts making fun of him. Oh, you thought it would be a magic kiss like Cinderella or whatever. That felt sadistic to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that because I do think that when we get to an X-Men movie, Jean Grey is going to be portrayed as heroic. And I don't think heroic people should be sadistic. Especially, it would be one thing if she was getting some sort of revenge against Peter, that he wronged her in some way and she did that to him. But he was an innocent in this. And I didn't like that. I liked the scene because I thought it was very important. I didn't like her motivation and her reaction. I think that needed to be touched a little bit just to make her less evil.
I'm a huge X-Men fan. I remember picking up Claremont's books and just being completely captivated. Jean Grey, when Jean Grey had already gone where she did by the time I started on Claremont's, but I made my way backwards and ended up getting everything of his, which was a fun journey along the way, having all of those issues and reading the whole story arc. And then eventually, you know, through collections and things like that, I ended up reading the original X-Men titles leading all the way up to Claremont's run. So huge fan of Jean Grey in general. She's been kind of the consummate good guy in all of that, especially with her interactions with Charles. I think they've painted themselves into an interesting corner here as far as where Jean Grey is at the end of this. She almost needs, you know, Charles. She needs the X-Men. I'm going to be curious to see how they introduce her into those films, because I like this film continuity, you know, where there is some form of, and if they jump her to just being a good guy without some form of journey, however brief, or even if it's an explanation of time passage and something happened to her along the way that got her to that heroic point, I'd be disappointed, just because I think we've portrayed her this way. I agree that the motivation makes sense. And that was something for me. I struggled with that on the way out because I really enjoyed the film. And I found myself wishing that it wasn't Jean at multiple points during the film. I liked the ending with her, you know, because we get like a journey at the end. And I do feel it opens the doorway for her to grow into the hero that we know and love off of that piece. I liked Sadie Sink as the character. I thought she did a good job as an actress. She was working off the script that she was given, and I could see her playing Jean Grey that we know and love, you know, as if we evolve her to that point. I now want to see that evolution somehow. I don't know if that's going to happen here. In the X-Men film, if we're going to see her appear in some capacity in the upcoming Avengers movies, but I do think she's good casting. Did you like her casting?
I was honestly a little surprised that I did. Okay. If you had told me, oh, we're going to have the, you know, Max from Stranger Things playing Jean Grey, mm-hmm. I don't think I would have seen it, you know, from just that. Maybe if I saw her, you know, her tryout for it or something, I might have been convinced, because I did think she played well. Mm-hmm. But you know, just on hearing it, I don't think I would have signed off on that. So I was surprised how much I liked her portrayal. I thought it had more depth to it than what I would have anticipated. I liked her on Stranger Things. I just didn't see her in the role she was in. And again, I would have liked to have seen her a little bit more. You know, just a slightly less self-assured, and maybe doing what she did. And then it would have lent itself to, okay, she's in a panic mode because of her sister. She's overreacting, whatever. Well, maybe not overreacting considering what happened with her sister. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, but that was her motivation. Whereas she seemed so self-assured that, like, it just... That's where it brought me to sadistic, and I don't like that aspect of it. That's what I keep coming back to on her portrayal.
I liked the scene.
Oh, I love the scene. Don't get me wrong. I love the scene. I thought the scene was great. I just you know, when I break it down and I go into the character, that's where I start feeling like it's not being true to the way I think the character should be.
And we're in the same place because X-Men has been an interesting journey. Like, I was a geek of the original X-Men films that came out, but there were things that I wish they hadn't done, if that makes sense. Particularly when they started spinning off into the Wolverine movies, which I think are an example of a movie series that got better as it went along. They started to get it right as they went along. But I feel like that original X-Men trilogy, there was a lot of things that they thought they did very well, and there were a lot of things that I wish they had done differently. Then we got into the next batch of X-Men movies, and I think there's a similar journey there, where I was liking what they were doing, but then they made some choices. I'm hoping this time around that they get X-Men right, if I'm making sense, where I feel about X-Men the way I've felt about Spider-Man movies. Overall, I've really loved all of these Spider-Man movies. And I'm taking Tom Holland out of it now and going through. Just, we've had, I think, some really interesting actors, some very interesting portrayals overall of Spider-Man. It's not saying I loved every choice, but I feel like I've really enjoyed the Spider-Man journey. I want to get that out of X-Men with the same level of enthusiasm. And where I get concerned about Jean is the where they took her in this. I did like the sister, and the sister was a key player in this one. If what didn't make me angry about it, because I think I would have been if there wasn't context. The scenes that they had with her and her sister, and explaining what happened to the sister, her seeing what happened to her sister training her to use her powers in the capacity that she was using them, because it's not a way we typically see Jean using her powers, even in the comics. All of that worked for me. And I really needed the motivation, like, okay, I got to believe, if it's Jean, I got to believe there's a reason that Jean would do this. Why would Jean be in this place? And remembering that this is pre-X-Men, that Jean has not had a chance to be trained by Xavier, kind of look at, you know, rally behind a philosophy, you know, that the X-Men are known for. And that part, the sister worked. I thought the sister's casting was very good because that was needed. And full disclosure, I walked into this movie knowing that Sadie Sink was going to be Jean Grey. So I had a similar journey to you where I was like, I don't know about her. But I had kind of gotten over that by the time I saw the film because I had known that she was, I saw it on Instagram at some point in time. So I walked in knowing it was her. And there's one other surprise in this one, or one other story arc in this one that we'll touch on that I knew walking in as well that they were doing. Which is another thing I'm not always fond of with Spider-Man. But the Jean Grey piece, I got there at the end. I liked her at the end. I wanted to see more. Well, actually, I should ask you that. I wanted to see more of her at the end. Like, by the time we got through the end of the journey, I'm like, I do want to see this character continue to evolve and grow. And I do feel that I do hope that they do that in later movie, the X-Men films. I hope there's some form of addressing of this. Because I want to see her come full circle. I don't want to see her just leap to being a hero, though. If they do that, I'm going to be really disappointed because, like, what did you do this for if you're not going to give us that overarching journey?
I definitely think we're going to see. It appeared clear to me that she was headed to Westchester at the end, right, where she was going to go to Professor Xavier's mansion. So, you know, we're going to get our X-Men, and this was our introduction to them. I would not be interested in a movie where it's her journey to the X-Men and where it goes, where she's the total focus of it. But if the movie opens up with her walking into the mansion, much like the beginning of the very first X-Men comic ever had, and she meets an already existing team. And, you know, I really would love it. I doubt seriously we're ever going to get it, but I would love it if the original team is the original team. Like, she walks in and it's Iceman, Angel, Cyclops, and Beast. And then we can expand as these go on. But I don't expect that to be the case. I think, you know, they feel too much beholden to the existence of Wolverine to do that for me.
And I want to be clear. I don't want to see a whole movie like with her journey. What I want to see is some form of either through flashbacks or something that some form of acknowledgement that her ride was a little bumpy to get to the point where she is the Jean we know and love. Because I feel like they left her in a place where she's not prepared to be the Jean that walks in and she's all happy-go-lucky.
Well, you know what might work for me a little bit is if we start an X-Men thing at the mansion, she's not there, and somehow Charles becomes aware that she is having a bumpy journey, and then the X-Men go to meet her and rescue her or something along those lines. I think that could be a good start to a story, but
I don't need it to be a long thing. I don't mean it that way. I don't need to, like, to your point, a whole movie. No, I don't want that. I want some acknowledgement.
Yeah, I'm very interested in knowing where the X-Men are going to go in the MCU, and you know, to some extent, it's much like the Robert Downey Jr. Tony Stark thing with Hugh Jackman and Wolverine. You know, Hugh Jackman has been just incredible as Wolverine in so many performances now, but unfortunately, you know, what do they say? Father Time is undefeated. You know, he's not the 30-year-old guy anymore. I think he's in his mid to late 50s at this point, and it's going to get harder and harder to show him as somebody who isn't aging. You know, it's the same dilemma you have like with Data in Star Trek and, you know, things like that. That as the actor gets older, it becomes a little bit harder to justify his playing the part. Although, in contrast to what I'm saying, I still thought he was great in Deadpool Wolverine. So, you know, who knows what we're going to get and how we're going to get it. I assume at some point they have to recast that role. And I wonder if they might be better off doing it immediately rather than bring Hugh Jackman back. I mean, you could bring him back in Doomsday where you're going to have a multi-dimensional thing. But when you do an X-Men focused thing, maybe you should recast it immediately, because otherwise you're just backing yourself into a corner with him.
I think you can do him in these next two Avengers films. If I don't know what their intention is, but I think you can get away with that. I wouldn't mind seeing him in another Deadpool movie if we get another Deadpool movie, just because I really love the two of them playing off each other.
Yeah.
But I think for the next batch of X-Men films, we do need a new Wolverine. I mean, because if they're going to build that into a franchise, which they're crazy if they don't. And I think Sadie Sink's age, and you know, they're trying to build an X-Men, you know, there's casting announcements for the X-Men that are starting to happen now. And I'm excited for those films. I will say by the end of the movie, I was excited to see her play Jean Grey again. And that was, it took me a while to get there in the film, but I was excited to see her play Jean again. I want to see the X-Men. So from that standpoint, I think that was a success in the sense I do want to see more. I don't know if everybody, you know, listening to this even agrees, because I do think that was a interesting choice. It was a risky choice making her the villain in this piece. Because, yeah, it's damage control. You can say that all you want to. But it really was, to your point, with the sadistic sequences in there, you understand Jean's motivations and how she got there, and damage control drove it. But damage control was not the only villain of this film. Jean Grey was a villain in this film. There's no two ways about it. You can understand her motivations. You can say she had a redemption arc in it and all those pieces. And I agree with that. But she was a villain in this movie.
Well, you know, I mean, just from the villainous point of view on her, we've had many stories at this point over the last 20 or 30 years about Charles overstepping his bounds, and, you know, whether his behavior is heroic or villainous. Mm-hmm. She's in that ballpark here, because not only is she taking over people's bodies without their consent, she's delving into their minds, because she even talks about, oh, she thinks this, she thinks that. So she's, you know, she's taking their personal information and going through it. I mean, it's it, you know, it is a a dilemma as far as her choices. You can justify it, or not justify it, but you can write it off to some extent as immaturity if you're going to try and have her be redeemed. Mm-hmm. And you could also write it off to some extent as desperation because of her sister's situation. But you do need to redeem her if you're going to go forward and you want her to be a likable character. Because the two choices are you redeem her and then you accept the redemption, or all of a sudden you just change and she's an upstanding person and you say, well, how did that happen? There's no story arc to give me that.
That's what I want, though. So I want, like, and I'm hoping we have a Charles. So we haven't heard anything. Is there going to be a Charles Xavier in Uncanny X-Men? I'm assuming yes. I'm hoping yes. But to me, that's the redemption I was talking about. What I'd like to see from the film is that she somehow learned some form of moral code from Charles Xavier, right? As far as how you interact as a telepath, how you use your powers, those type of things. I want and need to see that. I can accept that this predates all of that. You know, but that to me would be the motivation of what I'd want to see from an Uncanny X-Men movie. I didn't expect to go into that so much in this, but I really feel like the character was intriguing enough that I'm like, you can get me there, but I do want something that'll get me there. It can be small, it can be short, but this idea that what does Charles bring to the table? What does being in the X-Men bring to the table? These are misfits that have been wronged. I mean, that is an X-Men thing. You know, for a lot of the characters, because of the fact that they're mutants, they have been, and so many of the characters have been abused along the way. And there's so many of them that just visually look different than your average person that has led them to be outcasts and such, that there's an opening for that to be the premise of what the X-Men do and how they become a family and bring them together. So she is left in a place where that could be a thing, and I want to see it.
See, I know we're going far afield here with the X-Men stuff, but as far as that goes, I don't want Charles to be totally morally golden. And he's showing her, oh, you did this, this was wrong. Because I do like him as somebody who kind of goes back and forth between, you know, what he should and shouldn't do. So you have two choices, and I'm leaning towards the second. The first choice is he's a do as I say, not as I do type person, and explains to her the problems that with what she does. The second is she somehow comes to the realization on her own and she becomes the conscience for Charles. I like that second one more.
The only thing is I do like the idea of the X-Men being this school that helps train, you know, people to be better. I like that they uncovered along the way that there was more to Charles than they ever knew. You know, so you and I are in the same place as far as liking the fact that Charles has got some dirt under the nails. And he's got sides of himself that he hid for years. The original X-Men stories, if you look at them, Charles looks, and it isn't until, you know, later issues that you kind of uncover, oh, there's a little bit more to Charles here than we realized. But he comes off as this very moral, very motivated mentor. But at times he's a taskmaster where it is a, you know, kind of, you got to, you know, do what I say in this. And this is what the X-Men are supposed to be. And they're treated like children on that end. I don't know in the X-Men movies that are coming up, they're going to have to shrink some of that. And I think the moral piece that you're mentioning that's interesting about Charles has to play out a lot earlier than it has in the comics. And I love that because I agree with you. Charles as a complex character is incredibly compelling. And I've got to say, if there's anything about the previous X-Men movies, we've had two great actors who've played Charles. And I've liked the portrayal of Charles in the movies because of the fact that we do get that aspect of, we've gotten that aspect of Charles, I think, in between both portrayals.
We have, but I don't think it's really been explored. And I think that's some fertile ground for them.
Sure.
So I don't want him to be villainous either, but I want him to maybe be a little morally gray on some of his activities. And I like the idea of Jean having, you know, being whatever, 18 years old or whatever, however old she is, having had an epiphany and then becoming his Jiminy Cricket.
Learning where she's gone because of this movie.
So you have him at, say, 40-ish,
mm-hmm.
and morally gray, and her at 18 telling him, no, Charles, this isn't how to do it. I've been there. What you're doing is wrong. I like that.
I like that a lot because it actually addresses what I was asking for. That there's some kind of consequence of that. Like, this meant something.
Yeah.
And that's all I want from this. It's like, okay, if you're going to go this place with a mainline character, with a headliner like Jean Grey, have it mean something. So more and more as you're saying that, I'm like, no, I like that because there's an acknowledgement of the fact that girls crossed the line multiple times.
Yeah, have her a little bit haunted by it. Have it bother her. Just moving on to two other points of contention I had with the film. The first was brought up by my stepson, and he was very bothered by it. He was like, through the whole movie, there's three members of the Hand who they show. Then at the end, when he's fighting them, there's 150 of them. How did that happen? You know, and my answer was, I don't know. I said, I guess they were always there. They just weren't on the screen. But that was, you know, they could have used just a little explanation on that. It would have taken, you know, one sentence to say, oh, these other people were being, you know, held so in such and such a place or whatever. So that one's a minor quibble as far as I'm concerned. The one I had that
Wait,
I sit
on the hand for one second.
Sure. Go ahead.
About that. So I was trying to wrap my head around that too. And did you get the impression that the Hand all along was working with this Twisted Damage Control? Like they were the muscle behind the scenes, like they were in on what was going on with Damage Control? Because Damage Control, obviously, the head of Damage Control was doing some really untoward things. That's the real, that's supposed to be the real overarching villain of the story. So the Hand was never, my impression was the Hand was never reformed. The Hand was the muscle working for this version of Damage Control, and we're hiding behind the scenes for this purpose. And now if you see it differently than I did, and admittedly, I want to see the movie again to see if I still feel that way.
Well, here's how I interpret it, and they didn't really give me this interpretation, so I guess it's another weakness that, you know, I'm doing it in my mind canon. The Hand is kind of an insidious organization, as far as I'm concerned, not unlike Hydra.
Right.
So my thought, you know, I think the popular conception is that Jean is controlling these Hand people for him, and he doesn't even realize it. Or maybe they've gotten the ability to control them through whatever they did to Jean's sister. My thought is a little different on that. My thought is they manipulated him. They got him to do what they want to do. At the end, when they're battling Spider-Man, then they're being controlled by Jean. But before that, they have led him on this road to their own ends. And I like that. And he thinks he's, you know, he's reformed them and he's got them, you know, as his muscle. But they actually are using his company to get to whatever sinister ends they have in mind. And I think that's something you could play with in, you know, possibly a Disney series or something.
Did you see, I thought he was completely immoral.
Oh, no question. I agree with that.
Okay. Yeah. So we're seeing him the same way.
I think he thought he was, you know, more clever than he is. He thought he was the smartest man in the room. But meanwhile, I think he was being manipulated by them. Again, that's my mind canon on it.
I buy into that completely because of the fact that, I mean, we actually see that play out with how he thought he could handle Jean and the sister and how that all ultimately was going to play out for him. We see how naive he was during that. So, I mean, I think the movie plays out the fact that, yeah, he's morally corrupt, but he also thinks he's the smartest guy in the room and was proven wrong.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's an interesting aspect of it as far as I'm concerned that you can play with.
Mm-hmm.
The other aspect of the film that I had a little problem with that I needed an explanation is how did we get from Professor Hulk in Endgame and even in, when he appears for that few minutes in the She-Hulk miniseries, how did we get from that to the Savage Hulk again? When did that happen? When did Bruce Banner lose control over the Hulk? And that's something, I mean, and it's, you know, I think it's explained, oh, well, Gene was controlling the Hulk, but that doesn't do it for me because he's already using that power dampener because of whatever problem he has with controlling the Hulk. So I think I think it would have benefited from a little explanation as to why that's going on. And that bothered me a little bit.
Hulk movie.
Well, they can't do a Hulk movie because Universal owns the Hulk. Or is it Universal? Or, and I'm not sure which company owns it. Yeah. But it's not Marvel.
And by the way,
Not Disney.
Right? And I know that, but I'm actually agreeing with you that and that's one where I don't know. This film had a lot going on in it, and I enjoyed the amount that was going on. But I feel like one of the dangers are, and it's Spider-Man 3, the Tobey Maguire one, had this problem as well. It had too much going on, and there were certain things that were not well explained. And this one, if there's a criticism I have for it, it is I loved all of the geek out things that we got to see in it, but there were some of them that just needed a little bit more of something. I almost wish they'd taken a piece out and use some of that space to further explain some things, the Hulk being one of them. Because I liked, actually, the Hulk arc in this. I liked seeing the Savage Hulk. I loved what they did visually when he broke into the Savage Hulk, and we got to see him significantly larger, threatening, more powerful. What Banner's been holding back? Because I love the haunted version of the Hulk. And that being something that I'm a big fan of the Peter David run where, you know, for the longest period of time, Bruce Banner was in control. But then I loved that at a certain point in time until he wasn't. And we got to see multiple versions and it was all about his psyche and all that. I love that stuff with the Hulk. To your right, the dampener is something that we haven't had introduced. We've seen this lucid version of the Hulk in multiple appearances now. And to go to the dampener thing off of this, like, I would have liked a little bit more as far as when did he need that, which is where you're going. But I loved what they did with it. I thought it was cool. Because the Hulk's such a prominent character for me, I would have liked a little bit more. I do like his buddy cop appearance. I think the Thor movie, where they did a lot of buddy cop with him and Thor, I thought was a great movie.
Me too. I love Ragnarok.
Yeah, Ragnarok, I thought it's actually one of my favorite Thor movies. And I would have liked a little bit more on the journey to the Hulk from this. It's where I think we're missing a little bit of Marvel TV. It would have been some of these things didn't fit in the film. It would have been nice to see them appear somewhere else just to give us a little bit more tidbits. I know that hasn't worked out, but. They're talking about doing more Marvel animation. I wouldn't mind if some of these things in the MCU played out in a Marvel animation, you know, being clear that it's MCU and giving us little bits in a in an animated adaptation or something like that. But the Hulk, did you like the Hulk overall?
Yes. I just needed an explanation as to why he was Savage. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get that. And you could always do, like, I think I've always said you could go for the less expensive productions sometimes mm-hmm. and still be popular. And I like the idea of maybe having an animation arm to the MCU where you can delve into some of these things in, you know, like 1 hour specials. You know, and you could give us that because, you know, they don't want to do a Hulk movie, clearly, since that first one, because Universal does own the distribution rights to it. Right. So if they do a Hulk movie, they have to relinquish the distribution to Universal. And I guess that cuts way into their profits on it. But I believe animation-wise, I don't think they have to do that. So it gives them an option to do it. But, I mean, that is why... Instead of having a Planet Hulk movie, we had Ragnarok, which folded Planet Hulk into it.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know that it was to the detriment of that film either. Because I really enjoyed that film. I think Taika Waititi did a great job on it. So you know, that's not the issue for me. But I would love to see just a little bit more in the way of characterization of certain aspects of these people that. I understand that a popular, you know, in a movie where you're looking for big box office, it's hard to work it all in. I get that. But this movie, I thought this movie took some real chances with characterization because, again, as we've already mentioned, I think it focused more on characterization than on spectacular battle scenes. It had its battle scenes. It had a lot of action to it. But that wasn't the focus of the movie. You know, from along those lines, I've always loved in the comics when you see the Marvel world interacting with itself. You know, Scott often points to, I think it's an issue of Marvel Team Up, where something occurs that's, you know, like they're creating the sky to be whatever, and they just show that, like, Thor is dealing with it in another place. It's not actually, you know, focused on in the comic at all, but you see that he's there, just to show you that it's the same world they're in. I thought Florence Pugh's appearance in this kind of had that feel to it. You know, he knew that there was a mind control thing going on, so he goes to see her because of, you know, the Red Room stuff that she went through, that I guess is popular knowledge now, or at least knowledge among, you know, the superhero world. So she has that part in the movie. I thought it was an amusing part overall, but it isn't the focus of the movie. It just gives us a little piece of her. It's really a cameo, and then we move on. So I thought that was well done by them.
And I agree. I thought that was a great sequence, and not overdone too. I think there were certain choices where it's funny. I wanted a little bit more for the Hulk. But in that sequence, I felt like it was perfect, the perfect amount of usage of her in this. It was a great cameo, added something to the character. I feel like if you hadn't seen New Avengers with her before, if you hadn't seen, you know, her other appearances, like with Black Widow and things like that, that I felt like you were still, like, given enough that you knew, like, who she was and what her deal was. And the humor bits, I mentioned that earlier. Spider-Man's got to have a little bit of humor, even when it gets dark in this. And I felt like they did a good job of giving us some smile moments, some chuckle moments, things like that in it, to keep you going. In the film, because I need that from my Spidey. If you're going to go dark with Spidey, which comics do, you've still got to have that sense of hope. I don't want Spidey so dark that I walk out depressed.
Yeah, I agree totally.
A Spidey film can't do that for me.
You have to at least have comic relief in it.
Yes, yes. And that's Spidey at its best. And I felt like they did sprinkle that. That was an example of where they did sprinkle it in at the appropriate times.
Now, I'm going to hit on something that I've heard some murmurs of criticism that I disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
People are complaining, I'm hearing, that it's a PG-13 Punisher instead of an R Punisher. I don't think an R Punisher works in a Spider-Man movie. So your choice is the PG-13 Punisher or no Punisher at all, or a very, very minimal cameo of the Punisher. I thought they did a great job of presenting him as a PG-13 Punisher. I was entertained by him in the movie. I thought he, you know, wound up being pivotal to it. I don't feel by presenting him in a PG-13 fashion that they kind of dumbed down the character in any way. You know, he still wanted to kill people. You know, that wasn't the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, he had Spider-Man stopping him and whatever, and, you know, the interaction between the two of them, the chemistry between the two actors, who are apparently, I only found out recently, are apparently very good friends off screen. You know, that all came through, and I thought it was terrific. I loved him in this movie.
Isn't that true, the interactions with Spider-Man and the Punisher in the comics, though? I don't feel like, I didn't feel in the movie that this wasn't the R Punisher. I felt he was a PG-13 Punisher because Spider-Man was there.
Exactly.
And
he wanted to be the R Punisher. And they wanted Spider-Man was living.
Yeah, I felt like if Spider-Man wasn't there, we're getting all of that. Like, he's still firing things, even with Spider-Man trying to stop him. He's like, because he was getting annoyed by how much Spider-Man was trying to stop him. And I actually like that about the interactions between the two. So I do think he is the R Punisher who does not want to admit he likes Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
Well, until the end. In the end, he admits he likes him. You're a good kid.
Yeah, but I mean, you get there in the. But I'm saying, you know, in the early parts of the film, you know, it's almost like an annoyed. Like Peter doesn't want him there because he's got things under control. He's running it his way. He doesn't want Peter there because he wants to do the Punisher thing. So it was an interesting dynamic between the two of them. It felt very Marvel team up.
It did.
I loved that aspect of it.
Yeah, to me, that was the highlight of the film. It wasn't the Punisher. It was the Punisher and Spider-Man, the two of them together. That was the highlight of the film, as far as I was concerned. That and the emotional moments with MJ and Ned.
I will also, the thing that I thought they did very well with the Punisher being a part of this, we got some of the Punisher's backstory in this because it interacted with Spider-Man's story that was going on right now, this sense of loss, right? I think Peter got to learn more about the Punisher through things that were revealed. Jean got to learn more about the Punisher because of things that were revealed. If you feel like where did she start turning, you know, and start, you know, having some questions? I think when you start making assumptions about Frank Castle, then you learn about his backstory, and you've got to have some pause. And you start to understand where Frank, that doesn't mean you have to agree with Frank's whole modus operandi, but you do, like, for both Jean and for both Peter, during those sequences, there's something to go, a little more sympathetic to this guy than I thought I was going to be, and maybe I need to question my own path. You know, does Jean look at Punisher and go, I want to become him, or I want to gradually become something else? And I felt like he worked for Jean's journey as much as Peter's journey in this, in very subtle ways. They didn't beat you over the head with it, but they did a good job, I think, when he was they were hiding out with him, you know, using that with the character, because Gene had to have gotten into his head just like everybody else's. I liked the MJ bits with him as well. I thought he interacted with Mary Jane really well. Zendaya did a great job in this.
Yeah, she is an exceptionally good actress who I think, in my opinion, and I never watched her HBO series, so I can't comment on that. But in a lot of the things she's in, when she's been in Dune, mm-hmm. and when she was in, the new one, the other big blockbuster that's out now.
Oh, yeah, I'm blanking too. I'm sorry.
But I feel she's been underused in a couple of these things that she's been in, where they haven't. It's almost like they've stretched her emotional range more in Spider-Man than she has in these other movies that are supposed to be a little bit more serious than this, which is surprising to me.
Odyssey.
I couldn't remember the name, but yeah, like in that movie, her part is, it's almost like if you cut her out of that movie, you wouldn't even notice. So I feel she's been underused because I do think she's a better actress. I don't know what the reasoning is, but for whatever reason, I think you could give her more meaty parts. And I feel that this did. I really enjoyed the journey with her and with Ned. And I thought there was some interesting takes on that, because she was very open, her character, to hearing what the relationship was with Spider-Man and with Peter and learning about it. But it never clicked that her memory came back. Whereas Ned really didn't know what was going on. And then when they had their pivotal moment at the end, when he recognizes Peter, it's almost like the relationship between Peter and Ned, the bromance, is more important or more strong than the romance between Peter and MJ.
She did, though, have a familiarity with him. Like, there was a draw to him that she couldn't explain. It didn't lead to her having this love revelation with him, which I actually didn't mind that part. I liked that this wasn't just a light switch. I mean, the choice was made to have them forget. And I'm going to be curious to see if Ned fully remembers, or if there is that these are echoes, you know, like this is the reason why Spider-Man's kind of haunted him.
I think it has to be fully remembers.
You think so?
I think it has to be, because I think otherwise it's unsatisfying.
Yeah. Oh, I want that. So, I mean, I'm with you. And I actually liked where the film left us as far as maybe leaving it as a question mark is a bit bold. But I like that we didn't get this, like, now we're all of a sudden the bromance is back and everything, but I think it was close enough. The handshake bit, I thought the way that was slow, it started off slow and got faster as it went along, I thought was, it was a great sequence. And I, as far as how you end the film, was absolutely the right way to end the film. If we didn't give up something, some form of connection, some form of hope at the end of this, because we talk about how the film is dark, you know, at certain points. I needed that at the end to feel like, you know, high five it on the way out of the film. And that was a brilliant ending choice. And very, if that had been, my feelings on the film would be really different if that sequence wasn't the last sequence. Thing to say, but I feel like that journey needed to go somewhere.
Yeah, you needed to leave on an up moment.
Yes.
And I think that gave it to us. And I think it was, again, subverting expectations, which I always appreciate when it's done well. Mm-hmm. You know, the expectation is the connection would be with MJ.
Yeah.
To do it with Ned instead, I think it was a better moment. It became better because it was unexpected. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. Quick thought or question. This guy that MJ was dating, that he comes in, he gives her a kiss and whatever, and it triggers some of his angst. Is he going to be a pivotal player at any point?
Wasn't that the friend he was in the previous movies, kind of a little smarmy? I felt
no, that was not Flash.
It wasn't?
No, I don't. Okay. I do not believe so.
Okay.
Let me see if they tell me who on the Wikipedia page. Yeah, it says Iman Esfandi.
Okay.
Appears as a new unnamed boyfriend for MJ, identified by the film's subtitles as Paul, and believed to be a reference to Paul Rabin, R-A-B-I-N. One of Mary Jane Watson's boyfriends from the comics. If that's the case, then he won't be pivotal in the future.
No, it's it's an interesting choice. And I guess part of what I was going through, I'm like, are they trying to do Flash with her? And I'm glad actually for the clarification. And I'm looking at IMDb, he's listed as the boyfriend. So never really gets that kind of formal. I'm going to be curious to see what they do with these characters. I'm hoping we get more. I did leave this film wanting more of the Tom Holland Spider-Man universe. Like, I don't want this to be it. And I don't want it to end in Avengers. I would like another Spider-Man movie with these characters.
Well, what I've heard, the rumor is that they considered the first three, Homecoming, Far From Home, No Way Home, to be a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is the start of a second trilogy. That's right. What I heard. And that's, you know, with Tom Holland still looking boyish at 30 years old, you could probably get away with another trilogy before he starts getting a little bit long in the tooth to play the character.
And I feel these characters are so well realized that I would like to see more. If you were to talk about a success of this movie, I want to see more of these characters. The character development in this of the friends, Mary Jane, wherever that relationship goes with Peter, you know, in this, I want to see those two kids wind up back together again, you know, at some point. I'm glad for it to be a journey. I liked that Ned was a journey.
I really liked that we were able to get some little clips, some geek out clips, mm-hmm. without focusing on them enough to make it distracting. If you don't get them, you just move on and you're fine. But I mean, they did an homage to the cover of Amazing Fantasy 15. We got to see Ramrod, Boomerang, Tombstone. Is there anybody else that I'm missing there? Tarantula. I thought that was all very cool to just, you know, and you got a clip of them. I don't think there's ever going to be a movie that focuses on one of them. I could see where you could do something where Tombstone would be a key character, and his appearance in this doesn't prevent that from happening. But I could also see that they probably never will focus on them.
You don't see Spider-Man 5 being the revenge of Ramrod.
you could do a, you know, as I was talking to Chris Tyler, and he hasn't seen it yet, and he's not too high on the idea of seeing it. The things I told him about it did not seem to intrigue him, mm-hmm. but he said he would really like to see a street level thing with, you know, with Tombstone and you know, not even introduced, what's her name? DeWolf, Jean DeWolf.
Oh yeah.
You could definitely do a crime level story, with, you know,
I liked
Silvermane and Tombstone, and even, you know, you don't want to go to Kingpin because he's totally in the Daredevil thing, but you know, you could even have Hammerhead, and you could have somebody mm-hmm. like Ramrod be muscle for somebody.
Yes.
You know, you could definitely use these characters. Even Bullseye could be a mercenary that's hired. So not Bullseye, I mean Boomerang rather, who has very similar skill set to Bullseye.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff that you could do with that if you choose to go there. And they leave that door open for that kind of stuff. It would easily, you know, if you want to make this a Marvel team-up type series, instead of Frank Castle in one like that, you could have Daredevil and then play with that because they've, you know, revived that character with Charlie Cox playing him. So there's a lot you can do there.
I like Jean DeWolf quite a bit. I liked her kids, but it was also like emphasized some things I was really liking in the city. I loved the fact that like there are fans of Spider-Man out there. I like, there's Spider-Man merch. People honor Spider-Man. You got like the key to the city, you know, those type of things. I like that aspect of it because you got to sit there and say, when Peter gets the most downtrodden, what keeps him going? These are his people. This is his city. He cares. He's making an impact. I also like the thing that like it's easier sometimes to be Spider-Man than to be Peter Parker because of everything that he's lost. And I love that Jean DeWolf is doing such a great job of recognizing you can't be Spider-Man all the time. You've got to learn balance. You've got to, and that's an important arc for this because where it's darkest is when he's diving into just being Spider-Man. And we haven't really talked about it, the evolution that he's going through, which is a big, big arc in this. Because of what happened with being bitten by the spider, he's going through something that I normally don't like. I'm not a fan of, and this is going to be a little spoilery as well. I'm not a fan of, I loved Tobey Maguire. I never liked the organic shooters. It's mm-hmm. just a pet peeve of mine. I like that Spider-Man's got to deal with his resources. In this one, I liked what he was going through. And I liked the suppressor. And that made a good reason to, you know, why is the Hulk in this? Well, he's trying to suppress himself. Peter's, you know, trying to learn about that tech and how he can use it to keep himself human. I like that it's a journey of trying to accept and embrace his own evolution as Spider-Man, you know, where this power set is leading him. From a story arc standpoint, I liked that more than I thought I was going to because I walked in knowing that that was a thing as well. Not knowing, you know, the depth of it, but knowing that the organic shooters were going to present themselves in this. And I was like, oh, I don't like the organic shooters. I never did. Like, now we're going to go to this and with this Spider-Man. I don't want that. And during this film, I was like, oh, I kind of like the way they're using it. I like the choices and what they did with it. It worked for me in this, which is normally not a preference of mine at all. And I liked how it played into the arc and what he was going through in his own evolution as Spider-Man and just trying to figure out who he is and who Peter Parker is in a world without his friends and still feeling like he should be distant from his friends, but not able to let them go.
I felt like they didn't give us a total resolution on that his powers going wild thing.
I agree.
You know, like okay, it was triggered by emotion. And they always give you like a puberty type feel for that his body is developing or whatever. But then once it's triggered, did the fact that he found some sort of mental balance make it be under control? Or does he need this device now to keep it under control? Because I'm not so crazy about the eyes go black and he goes into a berserker rage.
Yeah, I needed that. And I don't know that I needed it resolved completely in this film, but it's why I feel like I want another movie. You know, I want, like, can we do more with this character and explain more with this character? I don't know if we're going to get any more of this in the upcoming Avengers, like where he's going to, I don't know where he's appearing in those and how much depth we're getting with him there. But I do feel like I want more with him to understand where that's going, because I felt like we got some, not resolution, we got some growth with that, you know, in the sense that I think it is more under control than it was. But I hope we're not done. Now that you've opened that can of worms, I do need a little bit more from that.
Yeah, I agree. I guess the only thing I feel like we haven't discussed at all that I think is worth mentioning, Scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way he was played in this. I enjoyed his, just his appearance in general and how he was played. The only thing about it is, you know, why would Jean Grey choose him as her, you know, vessel to go after things, and seemed like, you know, she was totally fixated on him being the one. But other than that, I liked the way he was played in it.
I think it was power, you know, being able to utilize his power. I wonder if, too, like, I wouldn't have mind a little bit more exposition with that. Like, she wanted to use a villain because he was already, she knew what she was, she didn't want to corrupt somebody who was good. You know, if that makes sense.
I'm not going to give you that one, because look at the old woman she had driving the tank.
No, I'm saying I would have liked to have seen some form of, like, she's developing some form of code along the way or something. I'm not saying that I felt like she was doing that. I'm saying I wouldn't have minded something like that. You know, as far as the explanation of why the Scorpion, she was trying to take over Peter. I mean, I think that's something we got to talk about too, and was mad that she couldn't. So what would have happened if she took over Peter? Would she have ever gone with Scorpion? Would she have just continued using Peter? And I'm wondering if maybe the end, taking over Spider-Man, would have given her him as a sandbox to play with, you know, instead of Scorpion.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility with it. Anything else you want to hit on? I mean, honestly, I didn't get to pay too close attention to the score, so I can't really give you much in the way of comment on that. I mean, I know it was Michael Giacchino, who I generally like, but I you know, my without being able to give details, I'm thinking it was probably pretty good because it didn't call my attention to it, and usually when it calls my attention too much, that's for a negative reason.
It was, the music was exciting. You know, I mean, I felt the film was exciting. I'm with you. There's like, if you were to say, I haven't like downloaded the soundtrack yet, which I'm sure I will. I normally do with all the superhero films, but, you know, it wasn't one of those where I jumped out afterwards going like, there was this song that stood out for me as something like really enhanced a moment, which that'll happen with me quite a bit with superhero movies where there was a particular sequence where I was super impressed with the music, and that leads me to it. I've got to listen to the soundtrack just because I tend to put superhero soundtracks in with my comic reading. You know, the instrumental stuff in particular, just because, you know, I feel like it, the energy matches what I'm trying to get out of my reading experience.
Right.
And this one I haven't downloaded yet for that purpose, but there wasn't that song that stood out for me, which often happens. Like there's a certain sequence where I'm like, wow, that the music really hit me. But there was also nothing where I was like, oh my gosh, that was awful.
And that's a plus.
Yeah, I mean, because that'll happen where it's like something is misplayed into it. I thought it was fun. Nothing stood out. Can I comment real quick on the 3D?
Of course.
Just because I saw it in 3D, and 3D movies are an interesting bag for me. I like the technology. I feel like some films do it really well. I feel this is one of them. I'm over the throwing things at me. I don't need that. I don't need to be pretending I'm ducking and stuff like that. Like, I loved that with 3D growing up. I like when they use 3D now for a sense of depth, a sense of scale, and a sense of motion. And I feel like this film did a really good job, because so much of what Spidey does, and I think the traversal that Spidey does in these movies, jumping through things, almost kind of like the parkour Spider-Man kind of stuff that happens. I thought that was very well done in this. And the 3D enhanced the idea of depth. I like that in Avatar. I feel like the Avatar movies benefit a great deal from the use of that technology to create take big landscapes and make them feel like they're three-dimensional. I thought the 3D in this did exactly what you needed it to do to enhance a Spider-Man movie. Was it necessary to see the movie in 3D? No. But did I enjoy the 3D experience? Absolutely. And I thought that it did what I like now in 3D more than anything else. Because I thought this film, the action, I enjoyed the action quite a bit in this movie. And you got to have some great action sequences in Spidey. And I thought this had some really strong action sequences, particularly with the Punisher again. I thought that the interplay with the two of them during various action sequences were really well done. And Punisher was a highlight for me of this movie, 1,000% a highlight.
Yeah, no question. I agree with that. So I guess we're at the point. I walked out of this and I said, either a high Jaws 3 or a low Jaws 2. And then I ruminated on it, and I ruminated on it some more. And I kind of went into those character moments, because I think, you know, the spectacle moments, I think I'm able to rate immediately upon viewing them. I could say it either worked for me or it didn't work for me. And if it's spectacular and it really has me at the edge of my seat and that's what puts it over the top, I can feel that immediately. But a lot of times when there's character moments or thought-provoking moments, things of that nature, I have to sit and think about it for a while. And I've gone back and forth on it, and I'm pretty confident now that it's just Jaws 2. It's not a low Jaws 2, it's Jaws 2. And I think, having thought about it more, I am more interested in a reviewing or a rewatching of this movie than I was when it first ended.
So I walked out of a Jaws experience. I want to be very clear on this. It's not a Jaws movie for me. But the crowd that was there, the energy, like being, it's the weirdest thing. I hate lines, but I loved being in a line to get concessions for this movie. Because it was such a comic booky crowd that was there, and it was, the energy was really wild. So that, I walked out feeling that energy still. Then you come back to reality and actually analyze the film that you saw. And, you know, to the point, there were some things that I didn't like that they did. And there were some things that I loved that they did in this film. This was a Jaws 2 for me because of that. It brought me down, you know, to reality pretty quickly. It's not a high Jaws 2. It's a solid Jaws 2 for me. I want to see more of this series. It moved the characters around. And really, it's a Jaws 2 for me because of the character development. There were certain key beats that needed to happen. There needed to be a certain progression with these characters that I love in order to make me feel that that was the case. Frank Castle was a huge part of that for me. The Hulk sequences did that for me as well. I would have liked a little bit more of the explanation behind his need to be the Savage Hulk, but I enjoyed that quite a bit. But Frank Castle was the highlight. We mentioned Ragnarok, and I felt like that buddy treatment in this of Punisher and Peter Parker was what I loved about the Hulk and Thor in Ragnarok. I felt like there was that level of depth and interaction between the two, and I'd love to see more because of it. But Zendaya you know, the Ned sequence and all of that, that's the bread and butter of this. And Gene DeWolf, I don't want to make that a throwaway. I liked her introduction. I liked her and her kids and all of that. This atmosphere and world that they created made it a solid Jaws 2 for me. I enjoyed this film quite a bit.
Yeah, I did. You know, again, I enjoyed it when I watched it, and I enjoy it more having had a chance to think about it. Mm-hmm. So that's a win for me as far as I'm concerned. So thanks, Sean, for doing this with me. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Until then, enjoy the brand new day. Bye-bye.
The Spidey Tracker app says that Spider-Man is in the direct vicinity.
Oh, yeah? No way. That's crazy.